Upsala Podcast, Episode 14, Eric Mayer on Link. Welcome to the Upsala Podcast. The Upsala Podcast brings you up to speed on topics covered at this year's Upsala Conference, which takes place in October 2007 in Montreal, Canada. The Upsala Podcast is co-produced with Software Engineering Radio and Dim Sum Thinking. In this episode, we are talking to Eric Mayer from Microsoft, who talks about the new Language Integrated Query, or LINQ, technology that can be found in the new .NET languages. Please welcome your host, Software Engineering Radio's Arno Hase. And please also excuse the not so great audio quality of this episode. The mistake happened during recording and was only noticed after the recording, so it was not fixable. Sorry for the inconvenience.
So, Eric, how about we just start by you giving our listeners some background about yourself. Who are you? What are your areas of interest? What do you do?
All right. Well, I'm Eric Myers. And, I think since the first time one of my friends in high school tried to explain to me, you know, that X equals X plus one in TRS 80 BASIC, you know, didn't mean, you know, X equals X plus 1, but X becomes X plus 1. I've been intrigued with programming languages. And, you know, I've been on this quest to make programming accessible since then. Moving, you know, from, I started out doing Prolog and Cecil and Miranda to Haskell. And now I'm doing Visual Basic and C#. So it's been everywhere.
That sort of sounds like you're working for Microsoft.
That's true.
Okay. So you're sort of new brainchild. The thing you're working on right now is LINQ. I heard about that. I mean, that's why we're talking here. What is LINQ? What is it about?
Okay, so LINQ is an abbreviation of a language integrated query. And the goal of LINQ is to enable easy querying and manipulation of all forms of data in any .NET language. The way we achieve that is by importing ideas from functional programming, in particular monads and monad comprehensions, to unify all the different data models. So, often people emphasize the differences between data models, like XML, SQL, objects. And so they say, they are all very different. But the trick is that if you all view them with your monadic, glasses on, they are really similar. And that allows us to define one query language that you can use to query over these different data models.
That sounds really great. Could you tell us a little more about what these common abstractions are, how you actually go about treating them all the same?
Sure, I can do that. So if you think about data, all these data models have elements that are relational data are rows, and then tables are collections of these rows. If you think about XML, you have elements and attributes, and you have elements contain sequences or collections of child elements and attributes. And similarly, in objects, you have a lot of different container types like arrays and lists and so on. All these notions of collections are very similar. And if you define a set of operators that can, say, filter and apply a function to each element of a collection and, you know, sort collections, group the elements into kind of, you know, partitions, all these kind of operations are really, you can define them independently of the specific collection. In some sense, it's nothing more than using interface-based programming. So we define, you know, an specific interface and that all these different kind of collections implement, and then the queries are defined in terms of that interface. And so really, you know, you can view it, you know, saying, oh, we're using all complicated mathematics. On the other hand, you can say, we're just using common sense, object-oriented principles. You know, you define an interface, all these types implement that interface, and then you can define your functionality on top of the interface without having to know the kind of underlying implementation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that sort of makes sense. But I'm playing devil's advocate a little. There are certain differences between, let's say, XML and SQL. XML is hierarchically structured. SQL is sort of a global data pool that you just query, where you can start at any point and sort of just follow the relations any direction. How do you sort of treat that the same?
Okay, so that is a good question. So if you look at this is, I think, one very interesting kind of, you know, difference. So if you look at XML and objects, and now we're talking about the kind of nature of associations or relationships. So in objects and XML, relationships are kind of embedded in the kind of, you know, source of the data, and they kind of point to the target. Right? If I have, say a binary tree, each node has pointers to subtrees. In relational data, it's kind of the other way around, right? You know, if I have customers and orders, the orders point to the customer to which they belong. So there, the relationships are kind of outside in. However, you know, if you can map these kind of relationships, the external relationships, to internal relationships, and this is what the kind of OR mapping frameworks do for you. So you kind of bridge that gap by specifying, you know, how a table maps to a certain class and how this relationship that in the database goes the other way around is mapped to kind of a property or association that goes from the kind of, you know, source to the kind of target. So that was a very good question. Now, if we're kind of speculating a little bit, one of the things that I think is very interesting is to extend object-oriented languages with this notion of external or explicit relationships. And there's, you know, a fair number of research where people have been kind of, you know, floating several ideas on how to do that.
Sort of treating the object as a global pool that can be treated globally, using a starting point that's sort of outside them and using relationships that are sort of not part of the objects to relate them to each other. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. So the powerful thing that you get there is that you don't have to define these relationships up front. So in the relational database, you know, you can define a relationship with a link table in the middle. So that means that you don't have to change the types that you relate. And I think that's very powerful because in objects, you have to kind of know up front, you know, that you want to relate two types. And especially if you think about, you know, like a distributed environment where you don't have control over the types that you want to relate, having this kind of notion of external relations is very powerful. But again, as I said, you know, in most OR mapping frameworks, you kind of define your classes and you kind of bake in these kind of relationships and classes to these collections of tables. But there, you know, you lose some of the power of the relational model. And I admit that right away. So that's kind of something I want to bring into the object-oriented languages.
So language-integrated query is sort of based on this notion of having a global pool of data, and then you sort of filter all data by a query, by a condition. Let's say the address number is the ID of something else, that kind of thing. Is that sort of breaking it down to the concrete level? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. So you have to kind of, you know, keep in mind that link itself doesn't address this yet. So what link gives you is a kind of query syntax, you know, in the language that is defined in terms of certain set of predefined operators. Okay, and now when you're querying relational data, these queries are translated into SQL that will do the join. Okay, so that kind of works. What I was speculating about right now is, can we lift this notion of, you know, foreign keys and external relationship into the programming language? So it's kind of orthogonal. So the language integrated query gives you the syntax and operators for doing these kind of queries. The next step is to add the infrastructure, the runtime infrastructure, to do, you know, efficient joins kind of in memory.
Mm-hmm. I see. Yeah. But before we get to that, there are certain, established languages for querying. I mean, select statements as part of the SQL standard, or XPath for querying XML. Is link at a higher level of abstraction? In what ways does it go beyond these? I mean, I could easily imagine sort of generalizing SQL to be executable on XML data as well. So in what ways does link go beyond these?
Okay, so that's a very good question. This is the kind of thing exactly what I tried to explain before. So when you look at all these different query languages like SQL, XPath, you know, XQuery, they're all in some sense trying to do the same thing. They all have this notion of some kind of collection and operations on these collections. But each of them has a very different syntax, and, you know, it's kind of very much tied to the underlying data model. So what link does is to kind of see, you know, what is common between all these query languages, and how can we abstract this commonality and then encode that commonality in what we call the standard query operators. So if you say, you know, you could generalize SQL to work over XML, or you can generalize XQuery to work over relational data, that is kind of exactly what we do with link. This is the kind of generalization. It's like, you know, how can we generalize all these query languages? What is common in all these query languages, such that we can have one uniform query language that can, you know, query all these different data models?
Yeah, that'd really be cool. But I still don't understand in what ways link goes beyond, let's say, SQL. It should be possible to write a, let's say, cross-compiler or cross-translator, whatever, from SQL to XPath. So you could probably take the select subset of SQL and apply that to all kinds of different data sources. In what ways does link go beyond that, or is link just another syntax for things that select statements do anyway?
So that's kind of a little bit of a subtle question, but sure. And if you look at SQL, you know, people compile XQuery to SQL, and in some sense, in very real sense, we compile with link to entities or link to SQL. We compile link queries to SQL as well. So in the end, the expressive power of many of these languages, you know, is kind of, you know, the same. So I can take, you know, one language and cross compile it into the other. But the thing is, you know, I like to program in C# or VB, and I don't want to write SQL. I want to write this in terms of, you know, the language that I know, and in terms of objects that I know. And then, you know, these queries get compiled to SQL.
Okay, I see. So I'm beginning to get the picture. How it is sort of the generalization and the integration with the languages that adds the value. Is there any support in Link for writing data or changing, modifying data in any way? Because thinking of the overall life cycle of data, querying is by far the most complex thing. But if I sort of define these relations between my type system and the underlying data, it would be nice to reuse that, to leverage that, to modify the data as well.
Yep. So we do have support for that. So, for example, you know, if you do in-memory queries, you know, that is taken care of by the fact that you can create objects. The Link to XML API allows for updating the XML DOM, so you can do destructive updates there if you want. And then for Link to SQL and Link to entities, we do support change tracking. So, you know, if you bring in objects from the database and you modify them in memory, we track the changes and then you can submit the changes back. And again, this is something that most all our frameworks have. What we don't have yet is a bulk update. So like SQL, where you can do, you know, queries, you know, to do updates or inserts and so on. And that's not an inherent limitation. That's kind of, you know, relatively easy to add, but we just didn't get around to doing that. So, but there's nothing that prevents you from doing that.
Yeah, I mean, that's one area where many of the OR mappers have their weaknesses as well. So, yeah, it's easy to see how it can be generalized, but I don't think that's a big issue because, I mean, if you want to sort of do bulk things, you tend to want to optimize them some other way. But do you have...
So maybe I can say a little bit more here. So we have also support for, you know, you can do all these things via stored procedure. So if you have a stored procedure for doing these things, you can do, you know, call the stored procedures. An interesting thing that we also have, and because we have been talking about, like, you know, relationship navigation quite a bit, is that you can specify using a stored procedure to navigate the relationship. So you don't have to go via join. So maybe, you know, your DBA has, you know, some stored procedure that, given, you know, a customer gives its orders, or, you know, then you can use that and tell our framework to say, you know, whenever you say customer.orders, you know, use that stored procedure instead of kind of, you know, generating SQL.
Okay, I see. But do you have a sort of common abstraction for modifications of data, or is that specific for the different mappings?
Yeah, so the way you kind of modify data, that is dependent on the kind of, you know, the object context API, right? So, you know, that is where the change tracking occurs. So we have like instance-based you know, updates and so on. So that's kind of specific, really to the, you know, the object context, the abstraction of the database. So I would say, you know, and not so much on the kind of query mechanism.
Okay, I see. Yeah, that makes sense. In what ways, what freedom do you have to specify the mapping between the data model and your object model that returns the results? I mean, it's simple if the classes have the same name as, let's say, the XML elements, and the fields of a class have the same names as the attributes of the XML. But do you have ways to sort of specify a mapping between them?
Yes. So this is, you know, I think, you know, in some sense, where a lot of there's the design space there is so huge. And so, for example, you know, it ranges from, like, you know, some kind of default mapping where you say, you know, there's no customization at all, you know, tables are mapped to, you know, exact classes with exactly the same names, or you can have some kind of convention base, you know, if the table is called customers, you know, the class is called customer, two kind of, you know, extremely rich, complicated mappings where you can have all forms of inheritance and you can have, you know, one table mapped to multiple types, or, you know, one type to be split into multiple tables. So there's a kind of very, very wide range of possibilities there. And we have at least kind of two. It's like linked to SQL, which is, you know, based on relational data. And there's linked to entities, which is based on the entity data model, like, you know, entity relationship model. So that's kind of, you know, that allows you to do more richer mappings. But again, you know, I think the design space there is enormous on how to specify that.
Yeah, that's definitely so. Is there a specific syntax for that, or is it an API? How is Link sort of structured internally? Is it sort of like a language? I mean, we're talking about different mappings. That sort of sounds like there is an API abstraction where you sort of plug in. So what's the architecture of Link?
Yeah, so again, you have to kind of, you know, make a little bit of a distinction between Link, the kind of core Link, which is the sequence operators plus the query syntax, and then the specific kind of, you know, APIs that interface with, you know, a particular database or data model. And it's usually the kind of mapping is kind of specific to that API or to that data model. And that is, you know, that's kind of orthogonal to the query syntax and query operators. But usually the kind of the way the mapping is done, I mean, I think most OR frameworks use something similar. It's like, you know, again, it ranges from just inferring this thing from the types, or putting custom attributes, or in Java terms, annotations on the classes, or having some kind of external XML file that specifies that mapping. But as I said, the whole notion of mapping is, in some sense, orthogonal to kind of the core of Link.
One of the things that is sort of hard to implement when you write an OR mapper and is really powerful when you use an OR mapper is lazy loading with all the different kinds of optimizations for prefetching and that kind of thing. Is there any support for that in Link, or it sounds like that's probably up to the implementation of the actual data format plugin as well. Is it like that?
Yes, exactly. So let me give you a specific example of that. So, for example, Link to SQL allows both eager and lazy loading. And, you know, that is, again, you know, that's something that's specified, as you said, exactly by the Link to SQL API. And that kind of takes care of that. When you write a query, you know, that you're not traversing a eagerly loaded or lazily loaded relationship in a different way. It is, you know, the underlying infrastructure that takes care of that. And again, you know, that will then, you know, has to make sure that, you know, all the stuff gets implemented efficiently.
What mappings does Link come with? I mean, if you use Visual Studio, what mappings do you get out of the box without having to write them yourselves?
Okay, so out of the box you get Link to objects, which is, you know, just the query operators defined for in-memory objects and collections, in this case, IEnumerable. That's like in Java, that's iterator, so that's kind of lazy collections. Second one that it comes with is Link to XML. So this is, you know, another kind of, you know, XML DOM. that is designed specifically, you know, to kind of fit well with Link, to fit well with the query operators. Then there's a link to SQL, which is the kind of OR mapper that kind of goes directly to a SQL server. And then there's a link to entities, which uses the entity data model. And people are, you know, if you look, you know, if you search around on the web, you will see that people are doing all kind of interesting things there as well. So people are doing, you know, link to Amazon, link to the registry, link to SharePoint. And again, this shows the power where, you know, we give the framework and then people kind of build their own kind of layers that interface with some external data source.
Yeah, I see. Well, thank you very much. Nice talking to you. Quite interesting. I think we have a lot better understanding about how to query data now. Thank you very much. And see you at Uppsala.
All right. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Uppsala podcast. If you want to know more about the Uppsala conference or if you want to get additional Uppsala podcast episodes, visit the conference website at uppsala.org. This episode, as well as all the other episodes of the Uppsala podcast, are licensed under a Creative Commons license. The intro and outro music is by a band called The Plugs. The song is called Go East.